Hello and welcome to Talk About Jazz. I'm your host, Doug Hall, and I have a guest today who we're very excited to be able to talk with, and that's John Arabagan. He's a Filipino-American jazz saxophonist with credits that include solo work, composer, band leader, and even producer, as he has his own record label, founder of Arabagast Records. So I'm going to review a bit of a lengthy resume, but I feel it's always important to give the artist the credit due for their accomplishments. So we begin with 2003. John is a graduate of Manhattan School of Music in New York City. And 2005, he's then a graduate of the Jazz Study Program at Juilliard in New York City. And in 2008, he will release his first album as band leader of Outright, with personnel, as I understand it, that you're still playing with currently, and on this on your two releases that have occurred in January. And in 2008 of that same year, John received the esteemed Thelonious Monk Composition Award. And since that time, he's also been in collaboration with a wide variety of artists, particularly collaborating with and recording with the acclaimed Grammy Award winning and Downbeat Award winner, Mary Halverson, the experimental jazz guitarist, and with her quintet, septet, and octet. And actually just this week, John performed with the renowned free jazz saxophonist and composer, John Zorin. 2019, John was included in the Downbeat's International Critics Poll category for Rising Star in both tenor and alto sax and jazz artist. And finally, as an important personal achievement, John was awarded the Panama Filipino Presidential Award, which is the highest civilian honor an overseas Filipino can receive, acknowledging contributions to perception of Filipino culture worldwide. And finally, some educational background as far as instruction and teaching is concerned. In 2023, John joined the University of Chicago faculty teaching jazz saxophone, direct combos, and courses in jazz history. So that's quite a lengthy list of accomplishments, John, and welcome to today's program. I think what we'll do is we'll segue into the music at this point so we can ensure that we cover both cuts in our 30 minutes and have a chance to talk about them. I'd like to cue up the first song, Recharge the Blade, which is a title cut from one of your two releases from January. And do you want to set this up for us at all, John?
Sure. Yeah, so I released two records on January 23rd this year. Equally proud of both, but they're stylistically very different. The first is called Recharge the Blade and is the third and final installment of my Outright Trilogy project, which kicked off my band leading career way back in 2008, and the follow-up Outright Unhinged came out in 2013, I believe. And so it's been a long road, but this record features Dan Weiss on drums, Matt Mitchell on piano, Chris Lightcap on bass, and Ray Anderson on trombone, and myself on soprano saxophone. I focus on the soprano saxophone for this entire recording, which is the first time I've done that. The songs all from the record, they're almost all composed by myself, and the songs are influenced in they're influenced by my soprano saxophone heroes and their personas and their writing. And each of the songs takes a different hero of mine on soprano and kind of twists their writing and their aura And it wraps around, this composition wraps around each of the musicians' personal improvisational styles. So the songs are all influenced by famous soprano saxophonists, but once the improvising happens, it's really Matt's and Ray's and Chris's and Dan's own personal styles that get brought to the forefront. So,
all right, very good. So we're going to listen to approximately about 2 minutes of Recharge the Blade. That is
All right.
That is an explosion of sound and notes. It really just takes off after that drum roll intro and just kind of lifts off. I make notes for myself when I listen to this prior to the interview, and I hear some very supercharged bebop kind of really flying with a strong chordal piano statements. And are you actually playing with a different type of saxophone that creates that higher pitch that you come in with?
No, the whole record is on soprano. I'm normally an alto or a tenor player, but the original idea for the Outright Trilogy was that I was going to start with an alto record, eventually do a tenor record, and then eventually finish up the trilogy with a soprano record. So it was actually pretty intimidating because soprano is by far the hardest saxophone for me.
Yes, right.
So during the pandemic, I was putting in a lot of time on soprano, knowing that it was basically about time to get this record done. So,
right.
Yeah, it's just a higher pitched instrument. It blend. I love the mixture of soprano and trombone. And so, when I was like, okay, cool, for the fifth member of Outright for this edition, it would make more sense to have trombone. I couldn't think of anyone I would rather have than Ray Anderson, who's been a lifelong hero of mine. So to be able to get
right.
him on this record, get him to participate and put his statements on it, it's just an honor, and it's
yeah.
such a great experience.
Right. And you earlier set this up by saying that your playing would represent a variety of your heroes on jazz horn. Is
yeah.
that correct? Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
So I mean,
the compositions were inspired by different soprano saxophonists. So like
Sure.
there are references to John Coltrane on the record, Steve
Yes.
Lacy, Sidney
Oh, yes.
Bechet,
Right.
even the smooth jazz guys, because I mean that's smooth jazz is intricate to the soprano saxophone's history at this point, for better or for worse. So there's a nod to that in there. You know, the AACM guys, Threadgill, Roscoe, Braxton, there are references to all of my heroes there. And but once the group interaction thing starts, it's really about the five of us making music. So I don't want the homage or anything to distract from the fact that this is
Sure.
music in the moment, in the now, and it's from these five particular musicians interacting in the moment.
Right. And if just to give credit to the core musicians of Outright, these are individuals, obviously close friends, but you've been playing with them continually since your first album.
Yeah, so actually each iteration of Outright has a different rhythm section and a different
Okay.
front line. It was kind of I didn't set out to do that, but between the first two Outright records, there were some different personnel shifts and different moving around of things. And so I realized it's like, okay, so each record should have a different set of musicians that I'm playing with currently that really are up to date with where I'm coming from musically. And so it's
Sure.
actually worked out really well to have three completely different rhythm sections and frontline partners for the trilogy as I switch instruments, because it kind of there are common themes that run through the records, but also having different inputs of different musicians actually is pretty fascinating listening back to the three records as a trilogy as a whole.
Sure. Okay. So let's move on to the next cut. Now, this is a very different, I call it a soundscape of music entitled Doom Boom, which technically is from your other release, Survivalism. Correct? And then as the notes I have is you recorded this group of compositions in two different munition bunkers in South Dakota during the pandemic.
That's right.
Okay,
So during the pandemic, I lived in South Dakota with my family for 8 months. And I found a canyon really
Yep.
close to my mother-in-law's house that I practiced at every day. And so my previous solo tenor saxophone record called Bird with Streams was recorded at this canyon. And it's all Charlie Parker tunes and Charlie Parker adjacent tunes,
Right.
being that 2020 was his centennial. So while I was out there, I was practicing at this canyon a lot, practicing the Charlie Parker tunes, but also practicing soprano, which led to Recharge the Blade. But also, I had gotten a soprillo saxophone just a few years before that, which is the tiniest saxophone. It's a B flat
Right.
instrument, if higher than soprano. So it's very
Okay.
difficult, but I was spending some time out there in the canyon practicing it and trying to tame it. And
Sure.
the last couple of months I was out there, I met the widow of a cattle rancher that owned 400 munitions bunkers in southwest South Dakota. And it was a fascinating story for
Wow.
me. The US government built these munitions bunkers right before World War II to have a safe place in the continental US that was hard to get to for their adversaries. Also,
Right.
could deploy tons and tons of munitions like within a day, within 24 hours to the entire continental area. And also in an area that's sparsely populated to reduce any risk of casualties.
Right.
So this widow of the cattle rancher gave me a tour of these munitions bunkers, and they were fascinating. And each one of them is in a completely different state of disrepair or what have you. And I found a couple of bunkers that were really interesting and unique reverb-wise. Some of them have dirt on the
Oh.
ground, some of them were paved, some of them have cattle carcasses in the corner and stuff. So it was really spooky
Wow.
and fascinating and a really interesting window into the past, like, what, 70, 80 years of of the era. So I found these bunkers, and the next year in 2021, I was able to come back to the area and record Survivalism, this solo soprano saxophone record.
Okay, great. Well, I'm going to have our listeners enjoy this, what I feel is almost like a soundscape. It's quite exotic and creates an interesting atmosphere as well. So we'll go ahead and listen to a portion of Doom Boom. Wow, what an incredible variety of sound.
This is my fourth solo saxophone record. I did one on sopranino saxophone a few years ago. I followed that up with a mezzo-soprano saxophone record. And then I did this tenor saxophone Charlie Parker record that was released last year. And this fourth one, that's three or four different takes of free improvising that I was doing in the bunkers, and this is the first time in those four records that I combined different takes and overdubbed them.
Right.
So, part of a journey. It's a challenge to myself. It's trying to figure out new sounds and new directions each time I do a new album. And all those strange sounds, some of them are straight up through the soprano. Some of them, I bought a bunch of game calls, like animal calls. And I attached to different parts of the soprano. So the soprano is involved in all those sounds, all those different textures and soundscapes. But there are some prepared devices that were attached to it to try to get some of those sounds. And of course, the crazy reverb that was found within those couple different munitions bunkers.
Yeah. Well, even from a more literal sense, and I guess I'm just responding personally, it to me at first took me to, in a sense, an exotic tropical forest with the sounds of birds and other creatures kind of coming alive and at times literally screeching and yelling as if there, you know, obviously there's concerns we have, you know, environmentally. But it's an incredible soundscape and requires additional listening. So thank you for selecting that.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's that's a really original, unique piece in my repertoire so far, and I couldn't be happier with how it turned out. And it's, you know, jumping in and trying to say, how am I going to create a 40-minute album with this tiny saxophone
Right.
that has no repertoire for it and no history? And so the possibilities were endless, and just forcing myself to try to come up with something different and
sure.
try to make something out of it. And at the same
yeah.
time, you know, like, a bunch of friends who listen to electronic dance music and house music and stuff. And it just so
mm-hmm.
happened that I came across some combination of game calls and into the Soprillo that started making some lower sounds. And I'm like, man, can I make a dance piece out of just
right.
out of just the Soprillo and some sounds it can make? And so that was my attempt at that.
Good. Well, look, in the interest of covering a couple of additional questions before we run out of our time here, I wanted to hit you up with one of your quotes and have you just sort of expand on it as you feel like,
sure.
particularly your quote about your compositions. And the quote reads, drawn to the play of opposing forces, especially those involving abstractions of form.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously that's a very wide window, but maybe you could just touch on that in a few passages. And I've got one or two other questions to ask you before we close.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like, for some reason, I'm just interested in combining different and disparate styles and genres and eras. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, so for me, like, to in order to realize that and get that onto some pieces of music that I am proud to release, I have to do the homework for each of those styles and each of those genres and different
right.
eras and different
right.
saxophonists and different saxophones.
Right.
And I have to do the homework and really put in the work to be able to replicate some aspects of those styles or genres in order to combine them with other things. So I'm interested in sometimes when I'm playing a free improvisation gig, sometimes my study of Coleman Hawkins and my love of his sound and phrasing
mm-hmm.
and style will start to come out. And
right.
just the idea of Coleman Hawkins playing in a completely free ensemble with, you know, it's just not really where he was coming from, but I'm influenced and love his sound and style so much that there's a way to, part of what can be new is taking these disparate things and putting them together. And that kind of interests me.
Yeah.
And so the songs themselves have, lots of them have these disparate eras or directions, and I want them
mm-hmm.
to coexist somehow. And so for me, that's exciting to see how night after night on a tour with these guys, I've been on several tours with Matt Mitchell and Chris Lightcap and Dan Weiss, and like, they have all the information, and each night the songs will go in a completely different direction. So that's the kind of
okay.
thing that I love about creative music. That's the kind of thing I love
sure.
about jazz and the possibilities.
Right. Sure.
That's
sure.
the most important part for me.
Good. Hey, one other follow-on question, kind of just, I mean, we throw around different words in jazz and genre, traditional, bebop, et cetera. And obviously, labels are sometimes helpful and other times not helpful. So from your side, the wording is, what is for you the definition of the difference between more conventional jazz, and then if you want to go further to the other side, to the extreme, maybe where you live more with the desire of abstraction and experimental, what is the dividing line between conventional and non-conventional jazz?
Yeah, I feel like the dividing line actually is the musician's or the listener's attitude and what
okay.
they're willing to, what they're willing to include in the parameters of
okay.
what's possible in the performance.
Okay.
So, like, for well, yesterday I just got back and I played a benefit at Roulette with John Zorn, and it
yes.
was three improvs with different configurations between 11 different musicians, and it was incredible. And then
mm-hmm.
After the set, I went and met up with a friend of mine who happened to be playing at a bar, and they were playing standards, like straight up standards.
Right.
And they invited me to sit in on a couple tunes. And so on the same night, I got to play crazy free improvisational, non-structured improvising with Peter Evans and Brian Marcella and Dave Taylor and John Zorn. But then that same night, I played Out of Nowhere and End of a Love Affair with a rhythm section. And so the material that come out might ostensibly be different, but I'm still the same musician making my choices in those moments. And maybe sometimes one of those situations I'm running together eighth notes, and in others I'm thinking about more textural or sound based things, but they're not mutually exclusive, and the deeper I get in one side or the other helps the other side. So
yes. Oh, that's well put. Yeah, you have to consider, right?
Look at it as a big continuum, and it's really just about what parameters a musician or a listener will allow themselves to undertake when they're listening or when they're playing.
Yeah, very good. Hey, we're closing in on the end of our time segment here, but since you were with John Zorn, I just wanted to ask you, I mean, since he's so renowned in his range of experimentation and his compositions and his horn playing, what was the chemistry like for you on stage with John? I'm sure you've played before, I imagine.
Yeah, I was blessed to meet him early in, maybe it was a 2014 or 15, when he wrote 300 short pieces called The Bagatelles. And he was having different configurations of musicians perform maybe a dozen of those pieces every Sunday at the Stone throughout that summer and fall and winter. And so I got to play on many, many, like several of those configurations. And I loved him. I loved meeting him. I loved hanging out with him. I loved workshopping his tunes with him. I loved getting the insight into his compositional process and what he expects from the improvising. And then got to perform the pieces a lot. And I'm lucky enough to be on a Bagatelles box set that came out a couple months ago on a CD with, it's myself on tenor, Chris Speed on tenor saxophone, Christian McBride on bass, and Chess Smith on drums, playing about a dozen of these Bagatelles. And John Zorn plays on one of the tracks as well. So I have a history with John. We hang out, we get lunch sometimes and just catch up. And I ask him for advice, musical advice and life advice and career advice and everything. And he's been a great mentor to me. And so to get to share the stage with him last night at Roulette was great. And he always has great musicians around. You know it's going to be the highest level every time you're trying to make music with them.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's important. Thank you for kind of sharing that kind of insight and connection. Boy, it's always so important to have those people in your life, particularly in a creative world, as an inspiration, certainly, as well.
Yeah, I've definitely been lucky to have older musicians take me under their wing. Like I've been playing with Barry Altschul for forever, which is a complete blessing to me. I've been in one of Dave Douglas's groups for a long, long time. So and now Zorn and so there's I've been blessed to be able to play with a lot of musicians older than myself and musicians my age, and now like just incredible musicians who are way younger than me. So I'm trying to learn a lot about what we're doing here from all ages, and it's really just like I said, the parameters of what musicians are willing to try and experiment with, and that's really more important.
Well, look, John, thank you so much for spending the time with us today, and I'm very happy personally to finally connect with you live and to have a chance to chat with you more in depth about recent projects. And again, you have two releases for January, and that is Recharge the Blade and Survivalism. And you are on relatively on tour. That is, you are playing live with a number of different musicians is possibly a better way to say it. So I wish you all the best of good fortune with your releases and with your opportunity to play with the wonderful, continue to play with the wonderful set of musicians that you have so far in your life. So thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much, Doug. Appreciate it.